an Ironic Media production. Visit us at ironicmedia.com.
The access to those firsthand experiences, A, provides context for what you're going through. B, makes you realize you're not crazy. You're not going through this alone. This really is this difficult or this confusing, or yes, there's not enough information out there. It validates what you're going through on a day-to-day basis. But it also gives you access to real practical advice. How do other people navigate maybe needing to change doctors? Maybe they're not getting the right support that they need from a particular clinician. Knowing that other people have been there, done that, and what they found was most useful makes your journey a whole lot easier. That is the number one recommendation I always have, is if you have somebody in your life who has Lewy body dementia, you need to find your community of support.
Dementia Discussions. Here to help and empower our heroic caregivers with knowledge and experience. Dementia Discussions with the caregivers themselves and memory loss professionals. Here to help with 30 years as a geriatric social worker is your Dementia Discussions host, Barbara Hammond.
Hello and welcome to Dementia Discussions. I'm Barbara Hammond. Today on the show, I'd like to welcome Angela Taylor. Angela is the Senior Director of Research and Advocacy at the Lewy Body Dementia Association. Angela, welcome to the show. It's great to have you.
Thank you so much, Barbara. I'm delighted to be here.
It's great to meet you. So, and I know you probably have a personal story that goes behind working at the associations. Tell us your story.
Well, you're absolutely right. I came into the LBD field first as a family caregiver. My father, back in the early 2000s, was starting to have problems managing things like his medicines and his finances. And that's when I really started to get involved in helping him. But I was seeing changes for him for a couple of years that were very mild, very minor, and kind of episodic. They didn't like set a clear picture that made me know something was really wrong. But when some of those abilities that he always had started to falter, then it was time to go to the doctor. And we learned that Dad had mild cognitive impairment. And he also, it was just happenstance, he also had something called REM sleep behavior disorder, where he was physically moving about, thrashing, kicking, and even shouting in his dreams. And we only even happened to mention that just because he had mentioned it to me the day before when we were in the doctor. So those were the only pieces of information we had at the very beginning of his journey. And so I started to do my homework and look up what was mild cognitive impairment, because I didn't know anything about it. And I'd never heard of this sleep disorder either. What made me realize that we were probably heading into difficult waters was that I learned that mild cognitive impairment progresses. And I kept running into descriptions of Alzheimer's disease, dementia in general, and in combination with REM sleep behavior disorder, I kept running into this Lewy body thing, this Lewy body dementia. And at the time, I didn't even know how Lewy body was pronounced, how Lewy was pronounced or where that word came from. It took about a year. We got a diagnosis after seeing a neuropsychologist who really explored the different cognitive domains that were affected in my dad. When we realized what it was, by that point in time, I had found the Lewy Body Dementia Association because they were one of my sources. Then I started to get involved as a volunteer. And that was back in 2003. So it's been 18 years since I first entered this space.
Wow. I would say that's a very common story. Do you hear your story frequently?
Certainly when I meet other advocates.
Yeah.
You know, the none of us necessarily, unless we have a professional background that leads us to know about dementia or cognitive impairment, we generally either know about it because we have a family member who had Alzheimer's disease, or back in the olden days, it was described as senility. And so we have those memories of what that was like, but we really don't know what it's like to be a caregiver. We don't know what it's like to watch somebody in the very early stages. And that experience, I think, drives people, and that's, I would say that struggling experience where you're having to teach yourself. You're having to live with unanswered questions and problems you don't know how to solve yourself leads you to be pretty frustrated and want to do something about it. So I do think that a lot of advocates are born out of that lived experience.
And would you say a lot of caregivers, I mean, you're lucky in that you went to the neuropsychologist and were diagnosed with Lewy body dementia. Your dad was. But most people, it seems, are not given that diagnosis at the beginning.
We were actually really lucky.
Yeah.
It was very unusual back then for somebody to get a diagnosis quite early. We did a survey of the LBD community in 2010, and what we learned was, and we had like 950 or so family caregivers answer this survey, and what we learned was that it was taking people multiple doctors, many visits over 12 to 18 months was kind of the typical time frame. And actually, our time frame resonated with that, but we just happened to be in the very early stage. A lot of people back then weren't getting diagnosed until they were in the moderate stage of dementia. So they had already been living with this for years, where, you know, we were fortunate. But I think the difference was, is that in finding LBDA in my early years, there were no patient handouts. And I took an article, a research article with me to the neuropsychologist going, could it be this?
And indeed it
was. And that came from the early volunteers at the Lewy Body Dementia Association.
Wow.
So we got fortunate. Yeah.
Yeah. So let's drill down on that a little bit. I did poke around your website, which is great. And we'll put that in the show notes. And now years later, there is your website, thank goodness, and lots of information. So let's kind of drill down on what is Lewy Body Dementia. Because I think that's everyone's question. What, no one has heard of this.
Right.
Right.
The simplest way to describe it is it's a progressive disease that's related biologically to Parkinson's disease, but it shares symptoms with Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and some psychiatric disorders. So it's very complex. Because it shares symptoms with these more common diseases, it's often misdiagnosed. In fact, research studies tell us it is the number one most misdiagnosed form of dementia. If a person is part of a study and they go on to have a brain autopsy, those autopsy studies have shown what that rate of misdiagnosis is. So the symptoms of LBD really vary. What's in common with Alzheimer's disease is that it affects your thinking, your ability to reason and problem solve and use language, understand abstract concepts, but people with LBD often have pretty intact memories early in the disorder. They have reduced levels of attention, which can mimic memory problems. So they're really not taking that information in well in the first place. But people who met my dad in the early stage really didn't know anything was wrong with him. Because if it was just a social conversation, he wasn't relying on any of those higher executive function skills. He was simply being social. And that wasn't something that you could distinguish. But that's only one of the areas that are affected in Lewy body dementia.
Right, exactly.
So if you stayed with him longer, then some of these other things started to become more apparent.
Right. We started to talk about his sleep, which the REM sleep issue is very common. Yeah, that kind
it
of
is.
Vivid dreams and thrashing, shouting, kicking. A lot of people talk about that.
Right. So my parents had been divorced for 20 years or more before my dad got sick. But my mother had told me stories, which of course I knew nothing about REM sleep behavior disorder, but she had always told me that he would hit her in his sleep. And of course she thought maybe it was a marital problem. But it seems that he had this sleep disorder for many years. And we now know that most people who have this sleep disorder are at risk and go on to develop Parkinson's disease or dementia with Lewy bodies, which is one of two onset types of Lewy body dementia, and then another condition called multiple system atrophy. So it is an early sign that something is going on in the brain, and it is this the misfolding of these proteins that we all have in our bodies. It's called alpha-synuclein. And when it misfolds and it clumps in the neurons, then eventually it disrupts the function of the brain. And people with Parkinson's disease have Lewy bodies in the brain, people with multiple system atrophy, and people with Lewy body dementia. And so we call those Lewy body diseases.
Okay. So you're calling it misfolding. Interesting. I always thought of it as like an over accumulation, too many. That's what I always think of it as, like an accumulation of these protein deposits in a part of the brain that affects memory and movement and cognition.
Like, yeah, generally, you know, there's a structural change in those proteins.
I see. So it's not just the abnormal accumulation. Got it.
It actually changes shape. And in this case, it clumps.
Huh. Interesting. And so there's all these various components, which makes it hard to diagnose.
Yeah. So let me tell you about the how it gets confused with Parkinson's disease. People with LBD can either start with very clear changes in cognition that may or may not have changes in movement at the same time, but they will come later, or they start very clearly with movement changes that go on to get diagnosed as Parkinson's disease. But over time, most older people with Parkinson's disease then develop cognitive symptoms as well. And so it's like a spectrum disorder where you can present with movement symptoms or you can present with cognitive symptoms, but over time they walk and talk quite a lot alike. And at the autopsy, the brains are indistinguishable essentially from one another. You actually have to look at the clinical record, what symptoms occurred first. And so because these are so similar, a lot of people with Lewy body dementia develop the same changes in movement. And that includes slower walk, changes in that pattern of walking, might be changes in their posture. They have more stiff movements, their arms and legs. They can't move freely like all of us. Changes in their facial expression, where my dad was very animated. And over time, he lost a lot of that facial expression and it just was kind of dulled and slack-faced. I looked at my father's handwriting. He should have been a librarian or an archivist instead of an engineer, but he kept everything. And he had 10 years worth of small calendars. And I could see his handwriting change year over year. After he got sick, I was able to go, because I wouldn't have been involved in all of his finances and things like that beforehand. So once I was helping him and I was more hands-on in his paperwork, I saw these calendars and I was just struck by how obvious the change in handwriting was. And that's part of Parkinson's disease. And so they call it Parkinsonism, is those types of changes. But he didn't meet the criteria for Parkinson's disease, but he had some of those changes. And over time, they got worse. But they didn't start there. They started very subtly.
So that's how most people are diagnosed, right? With Parkinson's at the beginning, oftentimes, if that presents first. So that's what I hear in my group, right? That people are diagnosed with Parkinson's. And they're put on the Parkinson's medications, oftentimes. And then they go on to have some people present this way. They go on to have hallucinations. That's another big part of Lewy body dementia, is the hallucinations.
Is.
Yeah, the psychiatric component. So it's so
and some
complex.
People, and that's a third presentation, is that some people start with mild cognitive impairment. They're still functionally independent, but they start to have visual hallucinations or delusions or changes in mood. But that if they're having hallucinations and delusions and any change in cognition, that's a big sign to look for possible Lewy body dementia. Because people who have Alzheimer's disease do not have hallucinations and delusions early. That comes later in the disease. But if it's one of those presenting symptoms, you really have to consider LBD. My dad didn't experience that in the beginning. For him, it was the combination of the REM sleep behavior disorder and the mild cognitive impairment. And so listen to all those different patterns of onset we're describing, right? It's individualized, and we don't know yet why that some people present one way and others present a completely different way. But after a couple of years, they have a whole lot in common.
Right. That's why it's so hard to diagnose. And but let's just clarify. So visual hallucinations, we're talking about seeing people, animals, insects that are not there, delusions, false beliefs, strong false beliefs, right?
Right.
Persistent.
Yeah. Exactly. My father would tell me they're tearing down the building next door. Well, there was no building immediately next door and there was no construction. Now, whether that was a hallucination because he saw it and he thought he was seeing this, or that he had some way thought that that was going on, but he hadn't really seen anything. I could not explain. One of my favorite delusions that he had, he was convinced that the woman across the hall from him, when he lived in a memory care residence, he was convinced that the aide that was helping him was having an affair with a young man who lived across the hall. But the young man was actually an old woman who was simply getting care like he was. But he was very angry because how could this aide be having an affair with this young man? That was so inappropriate. So they actually had to change aides for him because he was so angry about this impression of inappropriate behavior, which had zero foundation in truth.
Gosh.
Yeah. And we're learning more and more that anxiety and apathy, you know, some of these things really can precede the cognitive impairment. One of the things that has come about in the last couple of years that's not specific to Lewy body dementia, it happens in other conditions, but loss of smell and loss of the ability to differentiate color. So color vision change early on can be a warning sign. It doesn't mean that it's specifically LBD, but you start to connect more and more dots. If you realize your loved one has this and you're like, oh my gosh, they also happen to not be able to see color as well as they used to be able to.
Wow. That's interesting.
I think when I think of cognitive diseases like Alzheimer's disease, like Lewy body dementia, at the beginning, I only would have thought from the neck up. But we've talked about sleep. We've talked about movement. But there's another, and certainly behavior, but there's also a change in the autonomic nervous system. And that's the part of us that regulates things like digestion and blood pressure and temperature regulation. And that starts to go awry. So again, not from the neck up at all. It's a whole body disease, actually.
Yes. No, we have talked about that, that blood pressure drops when people stand up or just having low blood pressure, fainting. Oh, yeah. All of these things occur. Right.
My father was going to Mass by himself. And after he fainted the second time in Mass and they had had to call an ambulance, we had to talk to him about not going alone because he would stand up to sing a hymn and he would get lightheaded.
Right.
And there was nobody there to notice and to help make sure he was okay. But we didn't even know at that time that he was having these lightheaded spells. That was the first time it became overtly clear to me that that was a risk for him.
Right. Goodness. So difficult. You know how hard it is. People finally get the diagnosis. They're like, oh, okay. They're putting it all together finally. So yeah, a year and a half. I'm sure you're right. It's probably at least a year and a half to get the actual diagnosis. Yeah.
Yeah. And in some cases, it's simply because the disease has not unfolded enough to connect all of the dots. Sometimes it's because you've not gotten to a specialist. And this is not a disorder that a primary care physician would likely be diagnosing unless maybe they were a geriatrician. The majority of LBD diagnoses, according to LBD families, when we surveyed them in 2010, were neurologists.
Yes, neurologists.
So you really have to get to the specialty level.
And you said neuropsychologist for your dad, but I would imagine it's mostly neurologists. Yeah.
It is. Well, and a neuropsychologist only adds information that the neurologist uses to make the diagnosis. But the neuropsychological tests really suggested LBD over Alzheimer's, but the neurologist had the full picture to make the diagnosis.
Yeah, sure. Had your dad gotten scans of his brain? Did he do any of the...
He had had an MRI, but that was the only one. But back then, we didn't have the scans that we have today that allow us to see a change in the parts of the brain that produce dopamine.
Yeah, so talk about that. Talk about the scans.
The brand name is DaTscan. It uses a very tiny amount of a radioactive tracer. And it's called a tracer because you can see it on imaging. And they use specialized scans. Depending upon the kind of imaging you're doing, it's either a PET scan or a SPECT scan. And they can see how this tracer moves then through the bloodstream and then up into the brain. And in this particular scan, they can see the area of the brain that produces dopamine is greatly diminished. Doesn't light up as bright as a healthy person's. It's very faded. And that's very common in people who have Parkinson's disease and Lewy body dementia. But unfortunately, it misses about 30% of the people who have these diseases. It's not 100% reliable. You use it as a component of making the diagnosis, not by itself. Kind of shows the results of the disease, not the disease itself. For everybody does not have a positive DAS scan who has Lewy body dementia.
Good to know. So your website is really good about talking about symptoms, all of these symptoms that we're talking about. Any others that you want to?
A few of the examples in the autonomic system. One of the problems that is very common in people with Parkinson's disease and LBD is chronic constipation. Now, you would not think about telling your neurologist if you had a problem with constipation, but they are very closely related. And if it's not being treated, a person can wind up with repeat issues like getting impacted. And so you have to look at the whole body when you look at this. So autonomic features might include sexual dysfunction, blood pressure regulation issues, as we talked about, standing up and getting lightheaded, but frequent falls as well that may not be tied to being dizzy. So it might be the Parkinsonism, it might be getting dizzy, it might be reduced attention, but frequent falls is one of the hints that a person might be dealing with LBD. Certainly problems with temperature regulation. My dad would break into these cold sweats and he would get soaked and he'd have to change his shirt. And this happened several years before he got his diagnosis. So, you know, some of these systems really start to break down before you can see evidence in the way a person thinks and functions. So, you know, you have to look beyond what's happening cognitively. And I think that's the one real message to clinicians and to families is to, you know, share everything with a doctor, even if you're not sure if it's related, when you're going through a process of exploring what might be causing a person's change in cognition.
That's a really good point, to share everything, right? Even if you think it's unrelated. Doctors kind of putting together this puzzle of all these, what's seemingly unrelated, into a whole. All these various symptoms that don't seem related to you, but in fact, they are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. They need all of that information to kind of put the puzzle together.
Right. What I hear often is, so they get diagnosed with Parkinson's and then they get put on the Parkinson's medications. Then they start having hallucinations and they get put on medication, antipsychotics, right? Do you hear this? I'm sure you're smiling. Yeah.
People with Lewy body dementia actually have really significant medication sensitivity. That's one of the most important reasons the diagnosis be made early and be made accurately. Because without knowing that, you might try medications and not prepare the family for possible side effects. And then you, instead of, as you're saying, instead of taking one way, you add a second medicine. And now you might be combating and having complications from these, you know, side effects from these medications that are affecting what you're trying to treat with one of them. People with LBD, especially with the older antipsychotic medication, which are used for diseases like schizophrenia, or might be used in a hospital setting if somebody is floridly psychotic and you give them an injection and it stops the behavior, if it's dangerous, you need to do that. But for LBD, these kinds of medications are especially dangerous. You know, we hear stories from families where they have a loved one that's had to go into the hospital and were given administration of one of these older antipsychotic medications, and they left the hospital a different person than they went in. It seems to be multiple doses are especially concerning, but we've heard stories where even a single dose had a real negative effect and people don't come back to their baseline. So physician education in the hospital settings is really important, but empowering families to advocate on their loved one's behalf and to say you need a neurologist involved in managing those symptoms is really important in the hospital setting. So the appreciation that those medication sensitivities are different for everybody with LBD is important to know. One study showed that only half of the people who had exposure to any kind of antipsychotic medication had a bad reaction. That means the other half didn't. And so you don't know going in if you're going to try a medication to treat the hallucinations and delusions, how they're going to respond. And so there has to be an important discussion. What do you look for that indicates there's a problem? What do you do when that happens? Well, you call your doctor right away because the doctor might have to reduce the dose or take them off entirely and try a different medication.
Right. And there definitely are medications that work better, it sounds like, than others.
Lewy body dementia doctors tend to rely on a couple of different medications that are in a newer class called atypical antipsychotics. But not even every medication in that class should be treated equally, because some of them do have a higher side effect profile in people with LBD. Hard to believe.
Yeah, which makes it challenging, right? It makes it challenging for the person with Lewy body dementia. It makes it challenging for the families, I'm sure, for the clinician.
Yeah. And I think, and speaking of, one of the things I didn't mention when we were talking about symptoms is the fluctuating nature of cognition, attention, alertness, wakefulness. They call this fluctuating cognition, and it is one of the key symptoms that doctors will use to make the diagnosis. From day to day, or even within the same day, morning versus evening, 1 hour over another hour, it's not guaranteed your loved one can function at the same level. There were days where, and I would say this was more, we were kind of leaving the early stage of dementia and entering the middle stage where this started to really affect his functional abilities in simple things. One day he could zip up his coat and the next day it was impossible. He did not understand how the pieces worked together. Same thing with putting on his seatbelt. I think the most striking one for me was one day he asked me, pointed to his watch and he asked what it was. Then he pointed to his glasses and he asked what they were. And then he wanted to know the difference between the two.
And this is an engineer.
That struck me as...
Yeah, I'm sure your dad
exactly.
is an engineer.
Right. And I wasn't prepared for that. But the more you live with Lewy body dementia, the more you realize every day is a bit of a surprise.
Right.
We had to plan more time into our day. Mm-hmm. If he had a doctor's appointment, we had to start earlier because he might need more help, or he might be walking slower, or he might be sleeping ahead of time and not waking up and be quite so alert. So everything required a little bit more planning, and he needed a lot more rest. You know, it was those days where we had a lot going on and there was a lot of stimulation, a lot of new people or going to a new place that would exhaust him, absolutely mm-hmm. exhaust him. And so we had to learn how to pace life mm-hmm. based on, you know, where he was in the disease and make sure that he had just the right balance for him so that he didn't get overloaded.
I think that's so hard for families. Because you have a 10 a.m. appointment with the doctor and you're in a hurry. And there's your dad who's having trouble moving. He's slowed. Uh-huh. He's not understanding exactly where are we going? What are we doing? Yeah. So I think that causes a lot of stress in families.
It does. And I think that learning to shift your expectations as the disease unfolds is absolutely essential to minimizing your own frustration as a caregiver. And recognize that this is not your loved one behaving in a way to just slow you down, but they're doing the best they can. But the disease is causing impediments that you have to navigate around for anything. My dad we had him over for dinner every Thursday night and every Sunday. Those were just guarantees, you know, bring dad over. And it was fascinating to watch the days where he was more alert and able to engage in conversation and the days where he seemed to be a little bit more withdrawn. One Thursday night is much like the next Thursday night, right? So we had a pretty routine schedule, but he was not routine. The disease was not routine. Mm-hmm. And so he took things in. This is what we learned, is that he was listening and he would process what he was hearing, but the visual stimulation seemed to sometimes overload him and he would not be looking you in the eyes, even though he was following the conversation. And he also had this visual spatial change where even when he was talking to me, if I was across from him, he wasn't really paying attention, but he would speak to me as if I was beside him. We know that people with LBD have a problem navigating three-dimensional space, like having good depth perception, for example, whether it was, you know, he just kind of lost track of where I was, or if he was more confused in the moment, or who knows. But, you know, it's the nature of the way the disease was unfolding.
And some days he could remember what his watch was, and other days or other weeks not. Huh?
Exactly.
Interesting.
Perfectly clear. Yeah. And even as the disease unfolded, I would say until he was about mid-stage in the disease. If you only had a 2 or 3 minute conversation and you weren't talking about something that required he have insight into how things work and operate, some people wouldn't know. And the staff would have to actually call me. So when he moved to memory care, so it's kind of about 2/3 of the way through the disease, the staff would have to call me and ask me questions because he seemed like he was just relaying something that was very factual and accurate and all. And he wasn't. You know, he sounded good.
Right, exactly.
But there wasn't truth behind it, but it was what he was experiencing as truth.
Mm-hmm.
So he was articulate. He was making good eye contact. What he was saying sounded reasonable. You know, it was possible, but not factual. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's where family members run into trouble too, because if you have a brief conversation, others would say, what are you talking about? He seems fine. Your husband seems fine.
Right.
He looks great.
Yeah. Right. LBD caregivers, we often call this showtime, that for some reason they are able to, a person with LBD when going to the doctor or when family is coming to visit, they are more energized. They're more alert. They're functioning better than they normally function. And the person who sees them for the first time in 6 months or 3 months or whatever thinks they're fine. And even if, because they're using so much of that energy that they normally don't expend to be on top of their game when that person is there, the next day they are completely depleted. They're more confused. They're much more sleepy. They do not function as well. Kind of like they used up all their mojo for that visit.
Yeah.
But that's really particularly difficult when that visit is with a physician. The physician's not seeing what you experience at home, then they may not be able to treat things that need to be treated.
It's true. And that's why they rely on, that's why the caregiver's history of what's going on. That's why it's so important to have the caregiver there to tell the physician what's really going on. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I agree.
And we had this wonderful physician.
People rising to the occasion in social situations.
We had a wonderful physician that my dad would sit closest to the doctor and the doctor would talk to him and then I'd see the doctor's eyes scooch over to me and I would either nod my head or I would shake my head so that he got confirmation whether, you know, that what he was receiving from dad was on target and it did not interfere with my dad's sense of dignity for him to do that, you know, and so that was really important that my dad be the first person to really relay to the doctor what his experiences were.
Oh. His dignity. That's great.
Yeah. It's so hard though, because when you're a spouse or an adult child and your loved one is struggling, over time you recognize how important it is that you speak up on their behalf.
Mm-hmm.
I happen to be a type A person. That's a really difficult thing for me to not do. And sometimes, you know, sometimes I stepped over the line and I had to reel myself back in because it was really dad's opportunity to speak with the doctor. And if I had other things I had to tell the doctor, I found a way to either email him before or after the appointment with some additional information just to provide context. And that context is incredibly important. So I know I'm preaching to
absolutely.
The choir. You completely understand.
No, but for our listeners, it's great. This is great information. And it's true. You can fax or email the doctor's office and get the information across that you didn't get to say or beforehand even send that information. Very helpful for the physician, of course.
And it's a nice way for the physician to have information without violating, you know, the HIPAA regulations. You can give them information and they can say nothing to you and privacy is still maintained.
Yeah. And your dad can have a good visit and not leave depressed or agitated or angry. Yeah, absolutely. I saw on your website, there's something called the Louis line. I've heard of the Louis lean, but I haven't heard of the Louis, So what's the Louis line?
This is our one-on-one support resource where you can call our 800 number and have the opportunity to speak one-on-one with one of our staff members to talk about challenges that you're experiencing, resources that you need help finding, et cetera. This resource is also available by email. And so you'll find it on our website under Find Support, but it's also right on our homepage, the phone number. Because not everybody's comfortable in a group setting, we wanted to make this resource available so that those people had a very specific need and it was just an occasional, you know, one-off question, that they'd have a way to get to us and have that need addressed by a trained professional. So definitely use the Louis line.
The Louie line, and you can call the Louie line at 1-800-539-9767, and we will put that in our show notes so that everyone can access it. So it's a 24/7 line that they can call.
It's not manned 24/7. People leave messages on it, and then we have staff people that call back.
Got it. Okay, great. Okay. All right. Well, we'll put that down in the show notes. So perfect. On your website, you have a whole tab on support, family support, caregiver support, and of course, support groups are there, which is great. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Oh, I'll tell you what, it was the LBD community that got me through this journey with my dad. I cannot emphasize how important it is for family caregivers to find somebody else or a group of people who have been in their shoes or who currently are in their shoes. So our support groups range from groups that meet in the community in person. Certainly during the pandemic, that's been very different. We also have virtual support groups that meet through Zoom, and we have Facebook support groups as well that are private groups that are not anybody else is not able to get into that are moderated by our staff. The access to those firsthand experiences, A, provides context for what you're going through. B, makes you realize you're not crazy. You're not going through this alone. This really is this difficult or this confusing or yes, there's not enough information out there. You know, it validates what you're going through on a day-to-day basis. But it also gives you access to real practical advice. How do other people navigate maybe needing to change doctors? Maybe they're not getting the right support that they need from a particular clinician. Knowing that other people have been there, done that, and what they found was most useful makes your journey a whole lot easier. That is the number one recommendation I always have, is if you have somebody in your life who has Lewy body dementia, you need to find your community of support. And it is not the same as somebody who is living with Parkinson's disease who does not have dementia. It is not the same as Alzheimer's. You need to find the LBD community because it's movement, behavior, cognition, sleep. I mean, it's so many things going on all at once. You need a community who can help you navigate that.
I couldn't agree with you more. Just seeing the caregivers and my support and the information that's exchanged, it's magical. It really is. It is.
It is.
That's what I say. It's magical. Yeah. The support that they provide for each other, oh my gosh. It's wonderful.
Yeah. Well, thank you for giving them a place to gather.
Oh, you know, that's, of course.
You know, everybody has different emotional support needs. Some of us need it early in the disease. Some of us need it when we're going through a transition where something is getting a lot worse. Some of us want it all the way through. Some of us just like feeling connected to other people. And we're not there because we need emotional support, but we want that shared experience. It doesn't really matter what brings you to the group. I think you're going to find something that benefits you. And even if all you do is and you're on an online community and all you do is read the posts from other people, that by itself is useful because, again, that helps you with that sense of I'm not alone in this. What I'm experiencing is real. Because of the fluctuating nature of the disease, sometimes we doubt ourselves as caregivers. Like,
oh, yeah.
Am I just making this up? and we're not. We're not. It really is that confusing.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, my support group is only twice a month. And that's what I love about your online community. Like I was seeing posts from 2 hours ago. So that's great. You can put a question out there and any time, day or night, someone will respond to it somewhere, which is great.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's kind of
it was
breathing.
My lifeline.
Good, 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 good. And we should mention they're free, right?
Oh, yes. Yes, absolutely. And our volunteers that run support groups are trained by LBDA. They're trained about the disease. They're trained about how to run their group and maintain its wellness. Yeah, because groups sometimes have a life cycle to them, and it's a really wonderful network of people that see how important it is to provide support for these families.
Yeah, and on Zoom, you can Zoom in from anywhere. You can be anywhere in the country. Yeah, you don't have
exactly.
to physically go at this point, which is really nice.
And now we have Zoom meetings for people living with early LBD, which is really exciting.
Oh.
And so they have private groups that are facilitated by our staff, and they get together and they talk about what's going on in their life and what's going on in the disease and what their experiences are. We have just a wonderful, so I'm not involved in those groups. Obviously, this is not my area of responsibility, but the feedback we get from our staff that are involved in them, how truly gratifying to be in that sacred space with them. And also from individuals who I know who attend those groups, how wonderful it is to have access to others who are living with LBD. We were at the International LBD Conference a few years ago, and one of the men that was on our planning committee had LBD, and he said it was the first time he was ever in a room with another person that had LBD.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah.
So people with LBD in the early stages, yeah, that's what you're talking about,
yep.
can be in a group.
Yep.
Isn't that great?
So we have a whole Facebook group just for people living with LBD, as well as that live Zoom support group.
That's great. And when you say living with LBD, they have LBD. So they're not with a person with LBD. They
correct.
Have the disease. Right.
They personally have the
have
disease.
The disease. Great.
Yep.
That's awesome.
These individuals are living large with LBD as well. They are a wonderful support resource to each other, and they embolden each other to get involved as advocates and to participate in research. And it's thrilling to watch the wellness that this brings to their lives.
That's great. That is great to know.
Because it normalizes their experience.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Oh, that's terrific. And you just touched on research. So let's go there. Perfect entree into research. I noticed that your website does talk about clinical trials. So if you want to chat about that, of course.
Now you're in my area of passion.
Yeah, let's hear it.
There's a lot of medications that are used in Lewy body dementia, but they were originally developed for other conditions. That means they only have limited benefit. Some of them work fairly well, but some of them work only a little bit. Some of them come with unwanted side effects. You know, we're having to cobble together treatment regimes that are not originally intended for LBD. They do help. These are very important resources that are available to families right now. But we need better medications. We need safer medications. And we are finally seeing clinical trials on the rise. It wasn't until 5 or 6 years ago that the very first nationwide clinical trial was done in Lewy body dementia. You know, there have been trials for decades in Alzheimer's disease and in Parkinson's disease, but not so in Lewy body dementia. We have a lot of ground to make up, and we're really excited to see pharmaceutical companies that are developing treatments and studying them in this patient population. And so we find it's really important for us to make those opportunities available to the LBD community to see if they want to participate in a study that's exploring a new potential medication. They can be part of that advancement by joining a clinical study. We also have other studies that are looking for a better way to diagnose the disease. And we're seeing huge gains be made in this area. It used to be that you could only absolutely confirm that a person had Lewy body disease, those are the Lewy bodies in the brain, at autopsy. Now we can do it in research settings in live people. And they're using techniques that use cerebrospinal fluid. So we all think of spinal fluid as that fluid that goes through our spine and up and around our brain and back. This gives us a lot of insight into the levels of proteins that should normally be there and how those protein levels change based on your diagnosis. And so we're seeing that. We're seeing brain imaging is giving us a lot of evidences. And even something unexpected, like a skin biopsy, is giving us the opportunity to identify people who have LBD while they're living. So none of these have made it into like mainstream clinical care yet. They're still being explored, but some of these are very, very accurate and have the opportunity to really be game changing. And that's going to help a lot of families.
Yeah, and that's exciting. That is exciting.
Because if we can't diagnose LBD well, how do we know we have the right people in the studies? We can't diagnose enough people to populate the studies either. And so certainly in the specialty centers, especially the ones that are like affiliated with a university hospital, they're really, really good at diagnosing these diseases. But in a general neurology practice, and certainly not in a primary care practice, it's more difficult. So to find a biological test, like a test for strep throat, like the measurement of somebody's blood pressure. We need a test that allows the doctor to just go, absolutely, this is what we're dealing with. And then you can help those individuals then can go seek the opportunities to participate in a clinical trial and maybe get access to a medication that might actually slow the disease down or a medication that might stop the hallucination better and more safely than what is available right now, or might improve their cognition, their ability to think and reason. And that's really exciting to think that we can help families get to that.
Yeah, I'm as excited about research as you are. So I'm a complete proponent of getting involved in clinical trials. So absolutely. Yeah, that's exciting. That's really exciting stuff.
Well, our mission really is support and outreach to the families, education of everybody who needs to understand what this disease is, and advancing research. And there's not one of those areas that's more important than the other. You know, anybody who's living with this disease will tell you we need all of them. Can't navigate it without support. The clinicians have to understand the disease, how to diagnose it, how to manage it, and we need to make more headway when it comes to research. You'll find that our whole team is really passionate. It doesn't matter what area of the organization we're in, where we're all really excited about the opportunities to make meaningful differences.
That's great. That's really great. If only this was around when your dad was going through it, right?
Yeah. We were in the very early stages. When I joined LBDA as a volunteer, I served on the board of directors. We didn't have any staff. We had no office. We were a handful of volunteers. That was it. But even that, because they were all people who had lived with LBD and somebody in their lives, it was a built-in support group.
Sure.
I had people who really understood what I was going through. So we didn't have all the resources that we have now, but going back to that point of finding support community, we started there, and that was a big deal.
You're clearly so passionate about this disease, and you're absolutely in the right place at the right time. And I thank you. I thank you for coming on the show and for being here today and educating all of us about Lewy body dementia. So thank you. And about LBDA, thank you for that.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for the opportunity to share more about the disease and what we're doing.
Thank you for joining us today on another episode of Dementia Discussions. If you're a caregiver or know someone who's a caregiver that would like to be a guest on the show, please call me at 310-362-8232 or go to dementiadiscussions.net/contact and let me know. It takes courage because not everyone's willing to do that. I would love to have you. Remember that you can follow Dementia Discussions on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and many more. If you listen on Apple Podcasts, it would mean a lot if you would leave a review. For any other information about this podcast, please visit me at dementiadiscussions.net. And please share this podcast with someone you know if you think it may help. Thanks again for listening, and I'll see you here again next time on Dementia Discussions.